Hey there, welcome to another episode of The Dead. Your host, Joe Felix. This is a podcast dedicated to analyzing and dissecting the art of stand-up comedy. Today, we're going to do something which I've been wanting to do for a while, explore characters on stage a little further. Stand-up is a medium that gets expanded upon often, and there's no one better to do that than John Leguizamo. We'll be covering his 1992 clip of Manny the Fanny. And with me today to talk about that is Raymond Abell, who is a bilingual performer and storyteller who was born and raised in South Texas. You know, he's a true Tejano at heart. He's heavily influenced by the Tex-Mex Tejano culture. He began performing professionally on the American stage at the age of 13, landed a professional improv gig at age 17. His goal, to bring more humorous Latinx content to mainstream entertainment and have a career path much like his childhood idol, John Leguizamo. Please welcome to the pod, Raymond.
Hey, hey, hey. How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. I'm enjoying the summer heat.
The summer heat, yeah. The in, you know, Los Angeles, it comes with a punch, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like, it's always like, is it ever going to really get hot? And then when it does, it hits you real hard.
Yeah, especially during the, you know, during March and April, people were all, wait till August. And you're like, eh. And then August comes, you're like, fuck, we're here.
Yeah. Oh, man. Raymond, I think people can kind of, if they're listening at home and they want to check out your profile while they're listening to this, would you be okay if we plugged your Instagram?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
I'm going to ask you about the project that you mentioned earlier to me. And I want people to be able to know where to stay updated on that project. So where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram at instagram.com/ or whatever it's called at Ray Ray Shownuff. So my Instagram handle is Ray Ray Shownuff, Shownuff, or you can find me on my website at Raymond Abel Tomas, TOMAS.com.
Oh, very cool. I love when people actually have websites. It makes things a lot easier.
Yeah. Shout out to my cousin who did my website because I am not technological savvy or anything like that. I'm not at one bit.
Oh, I think it's... Yeah, that's a big gap in my knowledge.
Yeah.
Even with places like we're not getting paid for this. Even places like Squarespace, they're like, this is the easiest thing you can use. And I'm like, nah, nope. No.
For a second, I was going to be like, ooh, maybe Squarespace could sponsor you now. But then I was like, no, not so much now.
please, Raymond, tell us about your project. And... Please, those of you listening, you can still be creative in quarantine. It's just a mindset.
Yes, for sure. You definitely, yes, I back that up 100%. You can still be creative in quarantine. Also, you move at your own pace during quarantine. Don't think you have to hit any milestones or be, you know, learning a new language. You set your own pace and you live at your own pace. We're all handling this differently and that's okay. The end game is that we're all going to come out of this and hopefully be kind to one another. That's what I keep saying. So hopefully, yes, I back that up 100%. But yes, also trying to be creative. I started to redo the show that premiered in Los Angeles in the 90s. And it was a take on the Latinx representation in mainstream media. Mm-hmm. So one of the writers had become my mentor. And we started talking about it a few years ago because it's always been a show that's been very close to my heart just because it helped me get through the high school years and whatnot, performing it. And so when I met her, I was like, you know, we need to redo this and we need to redo it to where it's more relevant and it's fresh. And she gave me her blessing. And I was like, can I get that in writing? And so she gave me her blessing. And so I've been, you know, I had been working on it since, you know, 2013. And I feel now is more than ever, now that I'm ready and I'm in a space, you know, taking these classes and seeing more Latinx art and, you know, spending some time in Corpus Christi where I'm from and grabbing from that Tejano Tex-Mex culture, I feel like I'm ready to do the next step, which is kind of put it on the stage for a workshop and for people to see it. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
And I know this is like a little far ahead, but where are you intending to debut it?
I'm intending to debut, like the ultimate dream would be LATC here in Los Angeles, because that's where it was first presented. but anywhere in Los Angeles, really, where we can grab some traction, or, you know, Latinx audiences can kind of come and see it and give some feedback, kind of like the workshop mode. I'd be happy with anywhere just to get it on stage and get some feedback for the initial workshop.
Okay. And so if I can ask about the issues that you are going to deal with in this new iteration of it, what are the new topics?
The new topics are kind of what it addressed in the first show, but a little bit fresher take, you know, the stereotyping of Latinx in entertainment, also putting us all under the same umbrella. I think entertainment has gotten a little bit better with recognizing that we're either puertorriqueños, cubanos, Colombians, are Mexicans, but just kind of drawing it out a little bit more. Also dealing with, you know, we represent, you know, a majority in America, but yet we're only like 3% visibility in entertainment. I think that's a huge thing as well. But also giving back to the Latinx audiences, you know, it's kind of a show for us. You know, we don't have to explain the jokes. We don't have to do anything. It's kind of just here for the gente without having to set it up for our non-Latinx audiences. It's like, this is what it is, and unapologetic about it.
Yeah. I do like, that's good that you bring that up, because I feel like there are people who will look at a Latinx, or even just like the larger majority of the U.S. will look at a show that's not specifically targeted at them or doesn't relate to their culture, and they'll be like, oh, this isn't funny. But like, it is funny. You just don't relate. You just don't understand. You're not, and I think people hate not being in on something.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the majority of the Anglo-Americans are like, they feel entitled to know what the thing is. Like,
for sure, 100%. And I think I try to address some of those issues, like, oh, you're not going to get that joke, and that's okay. But, you know, I try to address that in the show as well. But yeah, very much so. People will dismiss a show for, you know, as being low quality, when, because they don't get some of the jokes, and it's like, well, you know, that joke wasn't for you.
Yeah. And then I guess last question before we start getting into the material is, how was there a specific event that let you know that this is where your career was going to go? This is what you wanted to do?
It happened kind of in college. In high school, I was doing, you know, performing at speech and debate. I was performing John Leguizamo stuff. I was performing, you know, stuff from Culture Clash. I was performing, you know, stuff from In Living Color that I could grab. And then when I got to college, I realized it was all this American contemporary stuff and, you know, these classical works. And really, I was a Latino playing, you know, these characters that were written for white people, which is, mm-hmm. And then finally I was like, you know what? We did this thing where it was student directed one acts, and one director was bold enough to say, I'm going to do Freak. And I was like, I love Freak.
Oh.
And then she was like, would you do it? And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And I did it. I performed it. And when I did, it was kind of like not well received. Mm-hmm. Not so much not well received, but it was kind of like, well, this isn't what a director should showcase for their directing kind of final. And I was like, why not? It's just as hard to do one person than it is, you know, 20 people. But I think it's more so that it, like, this genre wasn't seen as what theater audiences expected. So trying to redefine what we saw as theater, because, you know, Freak is for a Latinx, it's for the gente.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what kind of my got my ball rolling. I was like, you know what? It's okay not to do theater for Anglos, or, you know, for the theater going, quote unquote, theater going classical audiences. It's okay to do it for anybody. And that's kind of what, that's what kind of started getting the ball rolling, was like, I want to do, you know, theater for people, you know, in my family, or, you know, like my friends who don't like the theater, you know, that's kind of what got the ball rolling.
Oh yeah. Then after, yeah, once you have that freedom, once you've committed to saying, I'm going to do this, you kind of gain a new wind. It's a different sort of motivation. You find yourself thinking, I can, like, there's this whole part of myself that maybe only I acted on, you know, amongst family or friends, but now I can merge that with my art.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yeah. And once you don't have those, you're not thinking about those, you know, those formers, like the former, you know, theater audiences and whatnot, you just let loose. I mean, it's a whole new ball game. It's a great thing just to let loose.
Yeah. And then we're going to see that right now with John Leguizamo.
For sure.
So we're going to play you the clip, listeners at home. This is John Leguizamo and as Manny the Fanny. This is from 1992. I do want to share that as John Leguizamo plays this character, he is, how would you describe it, Raymond? He's transgender.
He's a transgendered woman, tackling some, you know, universal issues in this, but he does it with, you know, a sensitivity and, you know, I guess we'll get into that afterwards. But yeah, Manny the Fanny is a transgendered woman living in New York City.
Cool. We'll be right back.
All right.
I didn't come here to eat your food. I shake greasy spoon. I won't eat your food if it was the last food on earth. What do you think, this establishment's exclusive? I just came here to take a piss. Don't talk to me like that, you old pervert, because I'll read you from cover to cover and you'll never recover. Because you people come here, you gentrify the neighborhood, you kick us out, and then you won't even let us use the bathroom. You can kiss my amber ass. Go ahead and kiss it, I dare you, kiss it. Don't you dare, because I come over there and slice your motherfucking pipi, yo se lo corto, desgraciado. I'm not playing with you, atrevido, condenado. Mira, policía, please, ayuda, ay, socorro. There's a case of discrimination going on over here. Well, shit, I would if you had one. Oink, oink, oink. Oops. Perdona, señor policía. I'm just playing with you. Well, don't give me that butch look. Save it for the cow at home. Oops. Did I say that? I'm sorry. This girl's got a big mouth, but she knows how to use it. Chaito, señor policía. Baboso. Ay, Dios mío. I gotta do one so bad, please. Girlfriend, how could you let him treat you so bad? You lied your last lie. And I cried, man, I cried. You're out the door, baby. There's all the fish in the sea. So, I'm about to go to stop. Ay, mira, precioso. Mind if I say, wow. Why don't you stop and say hello? I'm like white chocolate. None of the color, but all of the flavor. Where you from? You got a bathroom in your hotel? Where you from? You're not from around here. Where you from? Milwaukee. Ooh, I like foreigners. So do you have a bathroom in your hotel? Then why don't you let Manny the Fanny show you a good time? Well, excuse me, your blackness. Stuck up late and homosexual. Well, fuck you, your daddy is a faggot and he likes it. I know, I had him. Now go ahead and throw that bottle, but you better have good aim, cause if I'm not dead, I'm gonna come over there and slice your motherfucking pee-pee. Atrevido con that, I'll say that one. I'm not playing with you. Girlfriend, how could you let him treat you so bad? You fly your last life, and I cry my last breath. You're out the door, baby. There's all the fish in the sea. Girlfriend, how could you let him treat you so bad? Mira, Rosanna. Rosanna. Mira, Rosanna, you flat-chested, no-ass picarella. You must have flunked your manners at the Copacabana School of Etiquette, Miss Trebo, cool faux pas. And mira, Nenita, what are you doing on this side of the planet, huh? Oh, well, I'm so glad to see you. I got so much to tell you. Last night, I met this papi. Ay, he was bien de groovy, tú sabes. Ay, Virgen Santa, casi que me muero, ¿tú entiendes? What's the matter with you? Oh, girl, you always down. You always down. Don't tell me. Don't tell me. A terrible thing happened to you again last night. Nothing. Ouch. Oh, you know I'm cold-blooded. I'm so malicious and delicious. Well, look at me when I'm talking to you. Don't cover your face like that. Rosanna, look at me when I'm talking to you. Ay, Dios mío, nenita. Ay, bendito. Bendito, what is that? I didn't know. I swear to God, I didn't know. Okay, just take a deep breath and pull your sorry self together, okay? ¿Qué te pasó? What happened to you? Rosanna, if you can't tell me, who you gonna tell? Angel did that to you? And then now you can't let my brother beat you like that? That no good lowlife with his 40-deuce mentality in the Lancy Street sales pitch. I like to hurt him for you. I like to cut his motherfucking pee-pee off of you. Ay, Dios mío, Nita, look at you. You look like you got hit by a truck and you weren't that good looking to begin with neither. You can't let nobody crush your world like that. Ay, Dios mío, ay, fo, ay, listen to me, ay, Dios mío, listen to me, coño. Nanita, I know exactly what you're going through because I have been there myself. Yes, I was a pendeja too. I was a regular little Miss Masoquista, just like those poor sick bitches you see. Yes, I'm talking to you. Ho. Always hooked up with abusive pricks. That was moi, because I thought getting slapped around and getting kicked aside my head was better than nothing as long as there was somebody in my bed when I woke up in the morning, tú sabes, right? Because somewhere in this warped mind of mine, I just convinced myself that it was love. And from then on, I was lost in el mundo de cheap thrills, the expensive regrets. No, don't go yet, because let me tell you, it gets even worse. Till one day, I met this one dark prince, right? This one guy who played me like a fine violin, plucked my G-string just right, and made me feel like everything was Disney. Well, unbeknownst to me, he was just using me, and he was taking all my money to entertain other bimbets. And mind you, laughing at this poor lovesick freak behind her back. But let me tell you, Nenita, when I caught wind and I did, Sleeping Beauty awoke. And I came home early one night and I unscrewed all the bulbs in the house and I hid in the closet with an iron in one hand and crazy glue in la otra. And I waited, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. I thought he was never going to come, right? But at exactly midnight, in sachets, the Judas hijo de puta, right? Trying to turn the lights on and calling my name all lovey-dovey and such. Oh, Manny, baby, I got something for you. I got something for you. I got something for you too, cabrón. And I just held my breath, because this girl wasn't about to let his magic wand cast a spell on her again. And then I heard his floor chimes get closer and closer and closer. And when he got to that closet door underneath, I just prayed to God to give me the strength. And I just popped out and I conked him on the head with the iron, right? And on the way down, I just undid his zipper. I took out his big old finger, put crazy glue up and down, and slapped it to his thigh. That's right. Punishment accomplished, right? I took that body then and I dragged and I locked the door. But when he came to, I had the minute that he was screaming and crying and saying, I'm gonna get you, Manny. I'm gonna beat you today. I'm going to kill you. I knew I did something wrong, right? But I didn't care no more. Do you know why? Do you know why? Because I took charge of my life, that's why. And I just flicked on that radio and I drowned him out. To be or not to be? That is the question. You've lied your last lie. And I've cried my last cry. You're out the door, baby. There's other fish in the sea, ole. So you see what I'm telling you? Underneath, I know I'm crazy, but life is just too short to let people crush your world, you know? But yo te conozco, Rosanna, yo te conozco, I know you. I know you're gonna go home and he's gonna beat you and you're gonna let him beat you. And you're gonna go through this love, hate, hate love thing till one day you're hiding in the closet with an iron in one hand and crazy glue in la otra. But until that day, don't live on dreams, because there are no Prince Charmings coming to save you, just a lot of frogs. So you know what you do? You know what you do? You take your frog by his little green dick and you make him do what you want to do, because you are a Latina of the 90s, gay with a program, mija. Because if it wasn't for a Spanish woman, Columbus would have never discovered America. So you feeling better? All right, hurry up and go home before he beats you off for breathing, all right? Take care of yourself, nenita. Llámame, call me. I'll get the message. Call me in Nilda's. Yeah. Because she wants me to play this little practical joke on this boy named Loco. Un besito. Chaito. Oh God, please take care of her. Girlfriend, how could you let him treat you so bad? You've lied your last. Ay Dios mío, agarré un número so bad I could taste it, please. Ay Dios mío, I need a date. Ay, mira, precioso. Mind if I say, wow.
All right. Oh, that was a great clip.
Yeah, yeah.
I rarely get the opportunity, like, on my, like out of my own volition, to listen to stuff like this or watch it. I think because I started the podcast, I'm just like, next time I'll listen to stand-up is when somebody else tells me that that's what they want to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm so happy you brought up John. It's an amazing clip. But would you please share with everyone why you chose John Leguizamo?
Yeah, I chose John Leguizamo just because he's been an amazing artist for someone like myself, a Latino who doesn't really fit in the stand-up world you know, I come from a theatrical background and I love comedy, but I don't really fit the stand-up mold, you know?
Yeah.
I feel more, I feel more of the storytelling, theatrical, you know, character role. So when I saw him as a young child, I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of, you know, the path. And since then, it's been, you know, just watching him and, you know, how he creates and how he does stuff with this vulnerability. And, you know, he tells a story and he incorporates all these theatrical elements, but he also does it in a way that, you know, is sensitive. And it's, you know, like I said, the vulnerability of it all is just amazing. So that's kind of why I chose him, that he just incorporates all these different things into his show, and it's so raw and it's so out there and it's so open, that, you know, that clip was in 1992 and here we are in 2020, and that's the same issues that we're still dealing with, right? Like,
yeah,
transgendered issues and, you know, discrimination and domestic violence. That's all stuff that we are dealing with still. And that clip, I believe, holds up. If I saw that on a stage, I'd be like, damn, okay, I get it. Especially with the Latinx flair and the humor, it still holds up.
Oh, definitely. It's almost like, I wish it would show this clip in schools. Because it hits so many issues so well. And then they're all issues that affect like a Boricua transgender person in, I'm assuming it's New York, because they do mention gentrification, and gentrification is usually in like larger cities, and mm-hmm. there's a large Puerto Rican population. I think it's something that more people should know about. And about John Leguizamo, you know, I try to read the YouTube comments to see what people, because, you know, this clip is available on YouTube, what people are actually like, what they think. You know, you and I were people who appreciate the arts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in a place like YouTube, you get to see people who aren't so well versed in the arts still express their opinion about them. And they're all positive. I think it's very clear that this person has very raw talent. Well, it was like very talented, mm-hmm. and was very honed very well.
Yeah, and I think that's another good thing about John Leguizamo, is that he kind of redefined the theater audience. It was so much more, you know, Broadway was taken aback when they saw all these, you know, BIPOC people coming into the show, right? Like, it was now, like, Broadway was made for blue-collar people. It was made for us. It was made for the gente. And that's kind of amazing that he did that as well, you know?
I hope this isn't too far of what we're talking about, but the other day I actually was thinking about how, like, BIPOC people coming into theater, it forces people to face a prejudice. And I feel like the prejudice can be summed up as this. You know, white Anglos being dramatic on stage is an art, but, like, BIPOC people being dramatic is just them being emotionally unstable or incapable. And I feel like that was like an old stereotype.
Yeah. Or even like the emotionally unstable are being whiny, or being,
yeah, yeah,
are
yeah.
being, are being ungrateful, you know?
Yeah.
It's exactly. Like, but it, you know, and then it comes to the issue, like, what the fuck do I have to be grateful for? Like, what do you want me to be grateful for? But you bought a ticket to see a BIPOC, show, like, you know, it's always been that thing, you know. Yeah, but no, not off topic at all. I think that hits 100%. But yeah, that's kind of when he did that, you know, that whole it's you know, stuff that he handles with that vulnerability, and just amazing, and people can identify in some way with those characters.
Yeah, and let's start off by talking about the opening here. We see, for the listeners at home, we see a struggle between Manny the Fanny and, would you call them a stagehand?
Yeah. Someone.
Where they're kind of like physically pulling at each other. Manny Fanny's trying to pull away. And as she's doing that, she's saying, you know, I don't want to eat here at your crappy food, essentially, your oily spoon thing, your greasy spoon thing. And I just want to pee here.
Yeah.
And it's like they clearly mention the gentrification and the discrimination that comes with gentrification in both terms of gender identity, income, and ethnic status, or whatever that may be, like whatever your ethnicity is. This is the first incident of Manny the Fanny doing this, threatening to cut off somebody's pee-pee.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And not to speak too quickly about this, but I when I saw this hit a few times, I noticed that this is really like the fear of castration that some transgender people may represent in a like cis hetero male's mind. Someone who's not as, I guess, someone who doesn't really reflect on their own, who they are. But I think like a big fear for like, give me 1 second, please. One big fear for straight dudes is just losing their wiener in some way or another.
Yeah, for sure. It's very emasculating, for sure. The thought of it.
But I think John like weaponizes this really well, where it's like, I know what your fear is. Like with every encounter with each person or in each threat,
mm-hmm.
it's like, I know how like backwards your mind is, how sensitive your malehood is, that just the simple threat of this by a transgender person will like throw you back. It'll really scare the crap out of you. Right.
Yeah.
Any other threat wouldn't be taken as seriously, but this one is.
Yeah, and it's funny, like it's funny that you mentioned that, because you know she pulls out the knife,
mm-hmm.
And you know, rather than say, you know, I can slit your throat, I can, you know, stab you in this, it's very much so, I know exactly where I'm going to hurt you the most. You know, you can survive a stab wound, you can survive all this, but I'm gonna get you where it's gonna, you know, mentally get you for good.
Yeah. Then they call for the help of a police officer. They're like, you know, this is discrimination that I wasn't allowed to use the restroom. And then here's, maybe you can speak to this in crafting this dialogue for a one person show. I had to watch it a few times to understand what the insinuation was when they said, I would if you had one pig, oink, oink. And I was like, if you had one, what? Is it penis? Right?
Yeah.
Like, so what do you think is the insinuation here?
I think the insinuation, from what I got it in the '90s, you know, that whole, like, you know, the whole, yeah, suck it type thing, you know, when that was big, like suck it, you know, that type of, which also was like a playful thing that people would say, but also, you know, like, you know, to dismiss you or say, you know, the present day at that time, fuck off was, you know, suck it. Or, that's kind of what I grabbed.
Yeah. I really do like this. Save that butch look for the cow at home.
Yeah.
Because there is this juxtaposition of like femininity, where it's like, you know, your wife, really, assuming it's the cop's wife, mm-hmm. is trapped in this idea of like of marriage and like the wasting away of a person's body in that institution, right?
Mm-hmm.
Her like reaching the quote unquote being a cow, right? Which is like an offensive thing, right?
Yeah.
But what they're doing is like, I'm a woman, I'm out and I'm free, like I'm here walking the streets, like I'm here in the streets, and like I'm, you know, John Leguizamo has a slender figure.
Yeah. Right?
So not only is he attacking, like, one, it could seem like he's attacking this woman for, or like this guy for having a large wife, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But it's more like, I see it in being more sophisticated about it. He's even turning it on its head.
You know, because he, you know, if we, you know, break it down and, you know, we're doing, you know, some type of script analysis, he doesn't know what this cop, you know, he may not know what the cop's wife looks like, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of that idea of, you know, you're trapped in this idea of marriage and you're unhappy, you know, I'm over here living my best life type thing, which you just said. So yeah, that's kind of, it turns it on his head, and it's kind of, you know, has several different underlining meanings.
Yeah. I think that's an excellent way to put it. Like, you're unhappy with your life. I'm out here just, I'm doing my thing and I need your help. You're supposed to be helping me in this situation, mm-hmm. but because you're miserable, like you don't do it. Yeah. I'm going to call you out on being miserable.
Yeah. And I think that's what we do now, right? Like, you know, when people are, you know, when people have some hate or they have something to say, it's just like, oh, why are you so miserable, man? Like, you just lighten up and, you know, just spread some love. And that's, I think that's exactly kind of what that is right there.
I do like that as a comeback for everything now. Like, someone calls you whatever on the street and you're like, you're unhappy. Deal with it somehow.
Yes. Yes. that'll end so many also Facebook debates. It's just like, you're unhappy.
Yeah.
Done. Ladies and gentlemen, 2020, the new comeback is you're unhappy.
I like the use of Spanglish here.
Mm-hmm.
Because the words that are chosen are very, like, impactful words, right? Where he goes, señor, policía baboso. Did you recall that when he's leaving the interaction with the cop?
Yes. Yeah, and I think he does, yeah, those words I think are very specific. I'll let you go on. But yeah, I do recall that.
Oh, yeah. It's like... there's a sense, like, you know, there's a sense that gets lost in translation. You try to find the words that capture the sense of how the phrase is uttered in a different language, but you seldom find the same sense. So when you call someone a baboso in Spanish versus like an idiot in English,
mm-hmm.
there's something, I don't know, more like, I guess, familial about using Spanish in that way.
Yeah,
something more.
It has a sharper bite, you know. Yeah. It has, like, you know, if I say, "Hey, you idiot," or I say "baboso," like, you know, which one has the, you know, has a little bit more of a sting, you know, especially in our culture.
Yeah, and there's like I remember watching Fresh Off the Boat, and there are times where they'll say a word. I think, I don't know if it's Cantonese. Wait, are they Korean? I'm sorry. But yeah, in their native language. And mm-hmm. then I'll be like, oh, I wish I understood what that meant. Because that sounds like the way that they're executing that with their body. It's so different than what our translators are putting there.
Yeah. Much different than what the closed captions say, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think John was really smart in this, is that those words can be driven by emotion. So say if there is someone who doesn't speak Spanish, the intent and the emotion is there behind those, right? And there's also those words, you know, across his shows, very much it's Spanglish, but if you don't speak Spanish, you know exactly what he's saying. You know what those key words are. And then some of the words are just driven by, you know, that emotion. So I think he's really smart in that, you know, it's, once again, there's two different meanings to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I do like this, after certain interactions, he's kind of setting up the callback at the end, but he's also giving sort of the theme of the show. Other than someone looking for a bathroom, as you mentioned before, there's someone who's dealing with domestic abuse. And but he I think the song is by Pebbles. It's called Girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there's something so interesting and something that draws you in when he or they just pause and start singing this to themselves. It's like a mantra that you need to, you like, th- I look, this person in Pebbles are talking about this woman being used and played, and Manny the Fanny keeps telling herself, this is a thing, like, you got to call it out when it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And but it also sets it creates a pacing for the rest of the show. Then their interaction with is it a white guy on the street? Yeah, right.
Yeah, from Milwaukee.
Oh yeah, yeah. Milwaukee. I like foreigners.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a simple joke. Simple, but it doesn't mean it's not like hilarious. Mm-hmm. That's you don't have to do a huge setup for that. It's very clean. I feel like these type of jokes are a little more difficult to set up in regular stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the Mira Precioso at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Mind if I say, wow?
Right. Yeah.
It's such an interesting thing to show that this character is, like, they're willing to engage with their environment. And if I'm right about this being New York, then from what we hear, there's a lot of catcalling in New York. So this person, as a transgender person, participates in a way to kind of match them, not with the intention of being like an asshole, like a typical catcaller would be, right? To like make you feel less than. They're just like, I can like, you know, with the whole idea of reading in like, I think it started off, it was in ball culture,
mm-hmm.
the idea of reading someone was like sharpening the knife every time you did it. And in showing that this person can catcall, it's just another way to express that, the reading. It's like, I'm sharp tongued, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I need to, like, if someone's, and this, here's the thing, if someone's looking at me bizarrely, trying to like, someone's kind of trying to be intrusive and see like what kind of genitals I have, if they're looking at me to like try to gender me, and it's like, well, I'm gonna interact with them first. I'm gonna hit the first punch because they're trying to creep up on me, and so I'm gonna make them feel uncomfortable before they try to make me feel uncomfortable for no reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's very much. First you mentioned the environment. Like, I definitely see this character in New York City, you know, doing the damn thing, you know, just enjoying themselves on the pavement, just, you know, stomping down the pavement, and then, you know, getting these catcalls. And what I think what's really good about John Leguizamo is that you see it, and he doesn't dwell on it, but like you see him, see the character, you see the opposite person. And then that emotion kind of shifts real quick, and then comes the sharp tongue, or comes the next beat. You know what I'm saying? And I love that so much. But yeah, that sharp tongue is something that I think a lot of us, are a lot of, you know, transgender people, or a lot of LGBTQ people, you know, kind of develop.
Yeah,
at a young age, is because, you know, it's you gotta be on point sometimes to, you know, if someone's gonna come at you, and I think I know I kind of developed a sharp tongue at a young age, and sometimes you gotta mm-hmm. know how to censor it sometimes, but definitely
because it's kind of fun. You kind of want to do it sometimes because it's just a. It, you know, it's like clowning on someone. It is fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, and sometimes you become really good at it, and you're like, yeah, I have to hold back. This isn't the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, right now in the bank is not the best time when I'm trying to get a loan, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely see that sharp tongue, and it's a very much... it's a shield and a protector first. It's kind of like the body armor of like, fuck with me. Like, come on. Yeah. Like, this is what I got before I show you my knife, you know?
I'll tell you your insecurities to your face.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm going to, you know, and that's you know, like, you know, when you want to cut deep, you cut deep with words before you do anything else, right?
Oh, can I share something really, really quick?
Yeah.
The dudes on my in my family, right? We're all pretty good at talking crap. And I have one of my younger brothers is like 8, and I was telling him, like, you know, we're pretty good at talking crap, so I'm gonna teach you how to do it, right? And then I clowned him a bit, and I was like, mm-hmm. All right, your turn, right?
Yeah.
And then I have these sandals that I've worn for a long time, and they have a big imprint on my foot, and that in like the shape of an arrow, and it's so like that arrow is super white. Right? But the rest of my foot is like super, super dark, right? And no one ever brings it up, right? Mm-hmm. And then my brother, when it was his turn to clown me, he goes, "Your feet have arrows on them," and I was so hurt.
This is simple observation, and so hurt by it.
Yeah, but yeah. And then still looking for a bathroom, right? Mm-hmm. What hotel room are you at? Do they have bathrooms? And then, you know, we assume that the other person is being sort of hostile towards this character. And then, so then they threaten again to slice their peepee, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which should be the new, we don't call them dicks, we don't call them cocks, we don't call them, okay. It's yeah. Peepee now.
So you're miserable, you're unhappy, and also the year of the peepee. There you go. Yeah.
Well, it's a year where your pee-pee gets sliced off.
Yes, your pee-pee sliced off.
And then go back to the pacing. We have they sing Girlfriend by Pebbles again. Then we hear a pss, 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 pss. Then we hear a long pss, where they like where John Guzamo pulls into his body by crouching, like pss, like come on, listen. And then we hear we see that's Roseanne or Rosanna who mm-hmm. they're talking to, their friend. And then after initially talking crap to Rosanna, you know, the way that you jive with your friends sometimes, we find out that Rosanna is actually bummed out. And that Angel, her boyfriend, who is also Manny the Fanny's brother,
mm-hmm.
has been hitting Rosanna. And then, again, a threatening of cutting off the pee-pee. and then... then Manny Fanny tells us a story of a guy that she fell in love with, a guy that made her feel like everything was Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like how the audience responds to that. They hear that and they're like, yes, I understand that, like a fairy tale, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they get the figurative language. Manny and Fanny tells a story of how they got back at their trifling boyfriend.
I love that word, trifling. I use it
yeah.
once a day.
Well, you can go ahead and describe it. Go ahead and do it right now if you want. Wait, do you want to describe the situation?
Yeah, so the situation is Manny, you know, has set up kind of like this stakeout in... with, you know, the former lover and kind of hiding and to protect herself. She kind of had the iron in one hand and the super glue in the other. And like, you don't know where this story is going, right? She's hidden in the closet. And the way John crafts the story, you know, you're kind of intrigued and you're like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. And then, you know, hour one down, like hour two down, right? And just bust open and just, you know, the former lover comes in and just knocks him over in the head with the iron and then super glues the pee-pee onto his leg, right? So you hear that. But what I found interesting, you know, in that part was when, you know, Manny was like, his big pee-pee, you know, made it a point like, fuck this, it's not worth it. Like, you know, like no dick is worth anything, ladies. Yep, yeah. Like, you need to protect yourself. So yeah, he crafted that story very beautifully, I believe, you know, where you're engaged and you're kind of sympathetic and you want to know and you're like rooting for, you know, Manny and you're like, okay, what happened? Like, you know, fuck you, you know, domestic abuser. But there's also some humor to it. And it's just lovely how the way it ends, just, you know, a beepy glued to a thigh.
Yeah. Like... yeah. And then the fact that they know that they did something wrong, right? And then they kind of like linger on that.
Yeah.
And that lets the audience, and that really emotes a very specific emotion that I'm going to have trouble like being mischievous in a way. I don't know how to describe that emotion, but it's really fun to come across emotions that are hard to explain right away, but we just feel them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and what, like, sort of attitude. But then, yeah, we remember, you know, that this is a story about a domestic abuse. This is a story about empowerment. Like,
mm-hmm. Very much so.
This person who is being shunned or discriminated against by society at large is still there looking out for her sisters, for other people who might be in shit situations, just because mm-hmm. we're like in the barrio or whatever it may be.
Yeah. And then I think that's one great thing about you touched on it, you know, a transgendered female is very vulnerable to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But is there some way of empowering and like taking back, you know, that strength and, you know, also their familia, they're there for the familia. Like, you know, we're all we have is that kind of thing, you know, that, mm-hmm. that back and forth between Manny and the homegirl.
Yeah. And then we end it with a very empowering message of like, you know, you're a Latina in the 90s.
Yes.
And people go crazy.
Yeah, I was about to say that audience ate that up and I was eating it up. You know, I saw it again a couple of weeks ago and I saw it again, a few days ago and I was up, I was cheering. I was like, yes! I was like, I'm a fucking Latina in the 90s too. but you know, you love that part where people get empowered and people are just like, yes, you know?
Yeah, it's fantastic. And that's, you want to hear these stories. Like, you hate that you're watching people go through this,
mm-hmm.
but you need to relate in some way or another. You need to know that it's happening to other people, but that there is still a way out of it. That we you know, I don't know how to describe the idea of like knowing is going through it, but at the same time not wanting it to happen, but you still need to know that it does happen. I don't, it feels like it almost feels like a selfish irony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the end, it's crafted enough, well enough that it becomes empowering. There's a message at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that that's very much so the case here.
Also, I just realized I'm just describing a story. That's just what a story is, right? People go through hardships and then they somehow get out and you're like, oh, I can get out too. But so I had a brain fart anyways. No. But yeah, the beats of the story, are there any elements that you want to talk about?
Yeah, I want to talk about the dancing.
Okay.
The dancing is very very, I feel like, adds that uniqueness to this. You know, you put it, when we see it now, we see that dancing, you're like, that's drag culture. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's voguing, you know?
Yeah.
For me. And I think that's what really made it important that I was living in this world. I was in New York or Brooklyn, you know, by the pier. Like, I'm not even from New York, but I know, I saw that and I was like, oh, I know exactly where this is at real quick.
Yeah.
So I saw that and it's just very important, like, you know, what got the LGBTQ community through the 90s was that, you know, especially the people of color, was the voguing. So I thought that was very important. That was a very important element that really solidified and grounded that character and put them in that place at that time.
I like that you mentioned that because it's like this, like, I think it's it's a feeling that we all have, and I think very few people will actually admit it, but there's an awkwardness to having a body. There's an awkwardness to having urges, and the way that, like, the transgender body was focused on so much, you kind of, you build up an anxiety, and that anxiety, it gets released and manufactured into an art, which was like the dance of voguing. And this, and I saw a small bit of that with the fact that they use, you know when you have to pee, so you start kind of moving around and gyrating and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it gets translated into voguing. You're like, I'm not going to look like a fool out here.
Yeah,
I'm going to dance.
Yeah, I'm going to dance. I'm going to try to make it look good. Yeah.
Oh, very quickly. I was I forgot where I was going the other day, and I look outside my window, and someone was at the park practicing their moves. What's it called? The death drop?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I literally passed by them as they were doing that part. And I go, oh, I've never seen that in person in Los Angeles like this.
Really? Were they doing it on grass? Because...
No, they were on concrete. They were on the side. There was grass right there, but they were in the pathway, the cement walkway.
Wow, that's a new meaning to death drop right there. I'm not going to lie. I have tried it several times just because I was like, I want to see what I can do. Pero no, hombre, like, I just stay stuck on the ground for a second. I'm like, how? I was like, this. I made this look much better when I was drunk and I wasn't even trying, you know?
Oh, yeah. Then you got to play it off.
Yeah, play it off.
You're a break dancer.
Right? Like, exactly.
Yeah, styles in the middle of my routine.
Yeah.
start spinning on your head.
Right? Confused. I was like, gotcha. they start dissing you and you're like, you're unhappy. You get it.
That's awesome.
So mad props to anyone who can death drop. That's what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, that's a talent right in itself. Cool. Yeah, the voguing super, I think that was a really excellent point. We had the pacing mechanisms, we had the rhythm of the slice your pee-pee, where it's like, this is, I think, you know, you can take a lot away from what that gesture is.
Mm-hmm.
The act outs are hilarious, right? And yeah, they're not hilarious because it's John Leguizamo in women's clothing, or like being transgender in any way. Mm-hmm. It's because this John is the character.
Yeah,
right? There's, and they use their bodies so well. Yeah, because I know in SNL, right, we have a long history of having, like, black men in dresses.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the butt of the joke, that they're in a dress. That they're, like, these professional athletes, you know, people that we often see as, like, that get hyper-masculinized or masculinized, right? But John Leguizamo taking on this character has so much sophistication that they make SNL look like monkeys shitting in themselves in a barrel.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that, because there's this sensitivity behind it. There's this realness. This, like, you know, this idea, you know, it's not Vera DeMilo in Living Color, you know, it's not Michael Jordan, like you said, on SNL being put on a dress, you know,
Charles Barkley, LeBron James.
Chris Rock, Fred Armisen, you know,
mm-hmm.
It just all these, like, you know, not that he's super, but yeah, I know your point was like these super masculine, or what we view super masculine man putting put in dress. But yeah, there's this sensitivity and this beautiful kind of craftsmanship to it. So where I'm looking at it, and initially I'm like, that's John Leguizamo in a dress. But a few sentences in, I'm like, I'm on Manny's journey now. Like, who is Manny? You know? And I think that's another thing. I don't know if you've ever seen Tu Wong Fu.
No, I haven't.
So it's a 90s movie. Where three drag queens kind of, you know, redefine this entire town's image of what homosexuality is, and how, you know, these drag queens are kind of seen as angels. But in there, it's Wesley Snipes, Patrick Swayze, and John Leguizamo who play the three drag queens. And, you know, Patrick Swayze and Wesley Snipes are seen as these masculine men. But the entire hour and 30 minutes, I'm like, I'm seeing three beautiful women, you know, and they do it with such great sensitivity. And I've always wondered which came first, like the screenplay for Tu Wong Fu, or was John's characters first? And then someone was like, I'm going to write this because I saw John, because of how sensitive and how creative. I've always thought that. And then, like, if anybody's out there listening who has the answer, at least let me know.
Yeah, please let us know. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, like, there's this sensitivity and this great, this just beauty to it that I think as an actor, I appreciate so much.
Yeah. I think, but yeah, it has a very great narrative structure. We have an ending. We know what this is about. It's very clear. And I think there's something important about this being a one-man show rather than a couple of like vignettes or whatever. And it's like, you're sucked into their POV. We're not watching a character interact with other characters. I feel we're watching this person. It's almost like a, it's almost like a tangerine sort of thing. In that we're so intimately sucked into this person's day, and you just, and it doesn't slow down. Even if there's like a pacing with the dancing, it just doesn't get tired. You know, you kind of break up scenes in longer form things, and you kind of, so as to not exhaust the interaction between some characters, right? You get to then oscillate to like the B story, right? And you get to see a little bit of that, right? But with this, something that could get tiring quickly of just seeing one character, that doesn't. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, the train keeps moving, right? Like it keeps going, and you're still, you're like, you're on that journey the entire time.
I think it's excellent. I really appreciate you bringing this to the attention of me and my audience, all three of us. Thank you.
Hey, Grandma and Thea.
They don't understand what I'm talking about. Thank you for the listen. They make sure to play it.
I mean, so, that's who my audience is. My grandma, my tía.
Yeah. So, any last thoughts on this one?
If anyone's listening, you know, has never been exposed to John Leguizamo, I would suggest, you know, watching either one of his one-man shows that are available somewhere on Amazon Prime. I did not get paid to do this. But, you know, I went down the rabbit hole for a couple of weeks, you know, when we were talking about doing this and just watching them. And they're just so amazing. And I just love how the audience is there and they're rooting, and they're just the non-traditional theater audience like we talked about. So yeah, if you have a chance, just watch one of the one-man shows and, you know, just check them out. It's amazing.
And do you have a working title to the project you're working on right now?
The working title right now is called Brown Town, but that'll change once we get it up on its feet. But for right now, for the workshop purposes, it's Brown Town.
And once again, where can we hear updates or more about it?
Updates can be on either my website at Raymond Abel Tomas, that's Raymond with a Y and a D, and Tomas, TOMAS.com, or follow me on Instagram at Ray Ray Shonuff, Shonuff, Shonuff.
Raymond, I think we've killed this frog.
Yeah, all right. This frog is dead.
All right. Well, thank you for being on. I'll see you all next time.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me.